From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, December 2nd, 2022. Checking the calendar, tonight the LA Lakers make their annual visit to Milwaukee, and Sunday the Packers are in Chicago with the Bears. And today is National Bartender's Day. Sure, after I stop being a bartender, we get our own day. Recently, a 50-year-old Chinese man ran a full marathon, 26.5 miles, in under 3.5 hours, while chain-smoking cigarettes. He finished 574th, which doesn't sound impressive, until you realize there were 1,500 runners, and he was faster than 1,000 non-smokers. Nodding your head and bobbing along to music isn't just a human thing. Japanese researchers have discovered rats also bob their heads to the beat. Now, I'm not saying rats are great dancers like your Uncle Frank at a wedding, but they do seem to like the hokey pokey. Well-dressed dignitaries gathered to inaugurate a new footbridge in the Congolese capital of Kinshasa. Speeches were made, photographs were taken as the brand new bridge collapsed under the weight of all those dignitaries. Except for getting wet, they're all going to be okay. And from Florida, we have another silly lawsuit. A woman is suing Velveeta for $5 million. She alleges that the statement of the mac and cheese package is false. She claims it takes 20 seconds longer than the advertised 3.5 minutes. I think 3.5 minutes is just about how long it'll take before the judge throws this out. Let's stay in Florida for the next one. We have this bit of leftover news from the devastating Hurricane Ian. During that storm, the state of Florida, warned locals, do not shoot the hurricane. Floridians need to be told this. And finally, every parent can relate to this. Potty training gone wrong. Firefighters were called to rescue a 2-year-old after she got her head stuck in a toilet seat after she tried to wear it. I'm sure those pictures will haunt her the rest of her life. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Tom Papenfuss, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Titting.
Well, thanks, Max. A good week overall for markets. The NASDAQ up 2.1%, closing today at the bell at 11,462. The S&P up 1.1%, closing at 4,072. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.2% to close at 34,429 after rallying from a meaningful decline to open the day Friday to close up 34 points on the day. That now puts the Dow for the year at down just 3.3%, including a 1.9% dividend so far year to date. The S&P down 13.3%, including a 1.3% dividend. The NASDAQ down 26.2%. You know, I think the other notable comment here, Dave, the rate on the 10-year Treasury now right around that 3.5% mark, and it's especially notable, perhaps in light of what Jay Powell came out and was talking about on Wednesday. Clear the Fed has some work to do, clear that rates can go a little higher from here. But Powell pretty clearly signaled what I think the market largely already knew, which is the rate of tightening, right? The rate of interest rate increases may finally start to slow.
Yeah, Kyle, I think it was as encouraging as it can be coming out of his mouth at this point. They're obviously still going to maintain their hawkish tone because I think they need to keep everybody on board with they mean business, right, as far as the fight against inflation. I think a couple things to think about here. I think it's important for people to realize that inflation coming down is not the same as prices coming down. And I think people constantly hear from clients, boy, well, I still have the same price of the grocery store, or, you know, I don't see, you know, this coming down. Well, that's true, but it's not going up either as much. And I think that's the critical difference there. So here we are. We see since June, we've seen that inflation rate on a steady decline on the year-over-year numbers. The Fed's starting to signal that, yeah, maybe they're going to start to step back from that pace, the 0.75 point pace. You know, also a little bit of a reminder today, we had a very strong labor report again. Always interesting to see such good news come out, and then the markets have a bad reaction to it off the bat this morning. You know, just a reminder that we're not done yet, right? The Fed has a ways to go. Inflation is still elevated. But I think that you're starting to see some of the things that were strong headwinds at the beginning of the year actually might be turning to tailwinds.
You know, you point out that labor report this morning, Joel. We had a lot of economic news this week we can circle back to, but maybe just give us a little color on that labor report this morning.
Yeah, so the Bureau of Labor Statistics found that employers created 263,000 jobs in November, and that's still pretty strong. That's stronger than, Chairman Powell earlier this week was saying that 100,000 a month should be a pretty good pace, you know, just to sort of keep up with the population. So 263 is strong, but to Dave's point, it's slowing. For the months leading up to this, it was 392,000 a month. Last year, it was 562,000 a month. So you can see it's getting slower, which is good, which is what the Fed wants to do, as part of its tightening policy, but it's still not slow enough.
And Joel, you know, I think we saw the robots start talking to each other when that employment report came out this morning. You saw pre-market activity on the stock market start to point to a pretty meaningfully lower open. The market's opened in a pretty rough spot, and throughout the day today, as we digested the news, as actual humans got around to talking about what really matters, you know, all of a sudden you talk about a day in which, yeah, all of a sudden the Dow finished positive when it, you know, kind of points in time pre-market and right at open, you were down 1.5 or 2. It's one of those cases where, yeah, okay, good news, the labor market looks a little better than what we thought, bad news for the stock market somehow. And Tom, I think maybe a little bit of a nuance to kind of the difference between some of this technical day-to-day stuff and some of the more fundamental stuff we care about.
Yeah, I think today, this week in general, has been pretty indicative of what this bear market has looked like. We've seen major swings in the markets from, you know, the open to the close. It just typifies the uncertainty that we're seeing here, and really what are people making sense of right now? Just echoing what you guys were talking about with Fed Powell and kind of what's going on with the economy, we're getting a lot of different indicators here. You look at the labor and the employment market, you know, obviously it spooks investors. It's still quite, quite strong, right? 3.7% unemployment and the recent added payrolls. And then you look at, paraphrasing an economist that said, we're kind of like three different economies that we're looking at right now. One with the other part of it looking at, let's say, the consumer, you know, for 70% consumer-driven economy, the consumer is doing pretty well. I mean, that's kind of the confounding part is we're holding up, we're still spending. We're already on pace. I think we're out to a record start for holiday spending, you know, heading into a December month, which is historically a great, great investment month. But then you kind of start to look at home prices and housing, and that's coming down. That's slowing quite a bit. The 12-month numbers are holding a bit steady, but the month-to-month, we're starting to see the declines in home prices, rental prices. So that's where we're expecting to see more. So we're seeing kind of a mixed bag of a lot of data, and I think it's really throwing investors off.
In time, we had a couple of numbers this week on consumer spending, and as you say, it's confounding because the Fed's trying to slow down the economy, but those consumers are still out there spending. We had an update on the GDP, which is the biggest measurement we have of economic growth, and that what they upped how fast the economy was growing in the third quarter just because they found that consumers were spending more than they had figured before. And then we had the day after that, we had numbers on consumer spending, and consumers have consistently been spending more than the income that they're getting in. And as a result of that, the savings rate, because, you know, you can't save as much if you're spending more than you're getting in. So the savings rate actually reached the lowest point that it's been since 2005. It's one of the lowest in history. It's like 2.3%. It was, what was it, like 40% or something like that, you know, in the early days of the pandemic.
Joel, I wonder if that number, I read the same report, and I wonder if that might have something to do with the fact that cash levels are still at near record highs, and maybe it isn't viewed as a negative so much that the savings rate is declining, because maybe people feel that they're in pretty good shape with their savings, and they're a little more comfortable spending more of their paycheck instead of stuffing it in the mattress.
Well, there are numbers also that show that the household net worth is near a record. It's come down the last couple of quarters, but that's still really high. And I don't think that savings rate accounts for all of that. So people had money that they got from the government in the early days of the pandemic, and they couldn't spend it. So I think there's still some of that cash that's sitting out there that doesn't show up in the savings rate.
Well, and I think what's so interesting about what you said, Joel, about that money early in the pandemic we received that we couldn't spend, we're still dealing with the impact of that in supply chain disruptions and kind of a mismatch between demand and supply in particular. You know, you look at things like lumber prices that are plummeting now that housing's starting to come back down. Well, early on in the pandemic, you'll all recall we were talking about lumber prices that were up 100, 200% year over year because everybody decided, hey, I'm not going to go on that cruise anymore. I might as well put a pergola up in the backyard. I might as well refinish the basement. And certainly no shortage of those in my own neighborhood. And you see it kind of anecdotally, but then you see it in the data. Dave, it's kind of what you pointed to in your comments on inflation earlier, this idea that there's a difference between those prices coming back down. In some areas, they will. We're seeing it in lumber. We're seeing it in oil. We're seeing it in some areas where price volatility tends to be higher anyways. But also a reminder that inflation isn't strictly a measure of the level of prices. It's change in price, whether it's month to month or year over year. We've been talking on the podcast since summer about how that comparison point from a year-over-year perspective gets trickier now, right? Because we're comparing to a point in time last year in which prices had already started to rise. And, you know, I think one thing you pointed out in kind of the prep for the show was you see it in things like oil, right, where we had already seen a somewhat significant rise by the end of the year last year. And yeah, oil was a pretty big component to the early days of inflation, but it seems to be back now to roughly where it was at the end of the year last year. And so from a comparison point, it's less of a factor going forward.
And I think it's important to remember too, look back at the last 10 years of inflation, right? Where you're substantially below the long-term average. I mean, we had a couple years and quarters there where we were below 1% on inflation. I mean, so I think naturally you have to expect a little catch up in some prices, right? And so I think that's where we're at right now. You know, to your point, Kyle, we're not going to necessarily go all the way back to, you know, and some, especially in raw materials and rents and housing and stuff where we were, you know, before this inflation started. I think that, you know, to start everything off in the right direction, the first step is, of course, to stop the increases, right? And that's what the Fed is working on. And in the short term, month-over-month numbers, you take the last 3 months on inflation and annualize it, it's pointing more in that 3% range, which is much, much closer to their target. So I think the trend line is heading the right direction.
And I think the one catch to all this is how you apply it to the way you invest, right? That it's one thing to go, well, as inflation slows, markets broadly should start to strengthen a little bit because there's a little more certainty there. That said, there's plenty of investors out there who chased I bonds, who chased TIPS, who chased some other inflation sensitive assets. A reminder that those are all priced based on some expectation, and the higher the expectation, the more you're willing to pay for that inflation protection. Well, as your expectations start to come down, as the actual rate of inflation comes down, those securities that are designed to protect against inflation tend to look a little less appealing. And so this is a reminder that there's going to be a point in time in which you want to pivot away from some of that stuff back towards some more traditional bond type assets is one great example. The I bonds, which were so attractive when they paid north of 9%. Well, we knew from the very beginning of that conversation that that was going to be a very short window that they paid that. Remember that I bonds have a fixed rate plus some inflation rate built into it. And the I bonds issued up to the beginning of November were issued with a fixed rate of zero. So if inflation goes back down to, you know, where we hope it will go, back to that 2 to 3% range, well, the inflation component of those I bonds looks far less attractive. And all of a sudden, you're getting the reminder of, oh, yeah, this is why we've done things the way we've done it. Just because it didn't work for a year doesn't mean it's not going to work as we look ahead. You know, Tom, I think the challenges we face today are as great or greater than they are in any other period. We get questions every day from clients about things like the rail strike, the rail worker strike, China's continuation on this zero COVID policy. You know, those have an impact short term, certainly, but maybe a little bit different conversation when we're talking about kind of the staying power of some of those conversations.
Yeah, I think it's really important to emphasize what we're looking at today versus what does it mean for longer term. I mean, we can all get caught up in, you know, the market being down 5 or 6% in a given week or perhaps up. But it's important to keep a focus, especially as it relates to our investments, on what might be happening in the longer term time horizon. I think kind of back to what you were talking about with the I-bonds, you know, as great as it is, and, you know, people, I had many, many conversations about those with clients. I think one of the big limiting factors, of course, was the amount you could put in those, and not a tremendous amount to make a big impact on people's lives in that way. But I think importantly is what we care about is performance. You know, over, as you said, that rate is resetting every 6 months. And so when we look at the longer term path, I mean, expect inflation to come down to a more meaningful level. You know, what is the 5 and the 10 year period of performance look like on those funds or bonds compared to just a traditional, you know, bond fund that we invest in? And because we're looking at higher yields, we're looking at recapturing some of that discount to par on those bonds. Plus, let's say we get to an environment where maybe there is a recession, we have to lower rates. Now we're getting a little bit of tailwind to bond prices. So now we're looking at a much more fair comparison, and maybe the I bonds aren't the best, the greatest thing in the world when you kind of look at things on a longer term basis versus a shorter term.
And I think viewed within a balanced portfolio, there's a role for some of that type of stuff. And not to suggest that there isn't, simply to suggest that, you know, one of the reasons why we've been reticent to chase after inflation type assets is because there's some pretty known ways, some pretty known reasons why inflation gets under control. It tends to persist a little longer than we're comfortable with. But it's amazing how quickly things can change. And when they do, I think, you know, you get back to what you know works. And, you know, it's why we build things the way we build them. You know, Joel, we touched on the vast majority of what's out there this week in terms of economic data. Maybe the ISM numbers, one we didn't focus on too much.
Yeah, that was kind of a surprise, a setback. That's the Institute for Supply Management. They do two surveys. One is on manufacturing and one is on services. And the manufacturing one came out this week, and it said that the industry is in recession, basically, that it, for the first time since May of 2020, the purchase managers that they surveyed said that, you know, things were sinking, and it was based on the, you know, 6 months worth of new orders going down, and those manufacturers are just sort of saying we're gonna start, you know, limiting our production and limiting our hiring, although that's another matter because of the shortage of workers that they need. But you know, they're saying that, yeah, it's looking a little tight for industries right now. I also heard an interview with one of the directors of the ISM who said that they are thinking that this is going to be pretty short, that there's still enough demand out there, that the economy overall is still strong, that they don't foresee, you know, a major contraction.
You know, I think that's the piece that I keep coming back to, that I keep hearing and reading, is that we're in the midst of a pretty volatile time because of what the Fed is doing, raising interest rates, because of where we are just more broadly in the economic cycle. And it's going to lead to kind of these periods of modest contraction across various areas of the economy. But they probably aren't going to all line up together. The way you'd get that in a normal recession, where you have one or two areas that lead the rest of the economy lower, I've heard it referred to as rolling recessions, where you're hitting manufacturing for a little while, and then the services sector is slow for a little while, and in many ways, that's probably a healthy way to navigate a period of slower growth is to always have somewhere to hide a little bit. I think the good news there, that creates some opportunity for investors. If that really is the environment we see, it creates some places where you can overweight a little bit, take advantage of some growth that's happening in one and underweight in another that's slowing a little bit. And so interesting to see the ISM kind of survey showing, okay, maybe manufacturing is the place right now that's having a little bit of a slowdown. Maybe it comes somewhere else 3 months or 6 months from now. But it probably isn't going to be all at the same time the way we typically would see.
Kyle, that report also showed that because they're slowing down the supply situation, the delivery of supplies is the best that it's been in quite a while. So that should help the whole inflation matter too.
Well, I think more than enough for today. Plenty of stuff on tap again for next week. As always, we look forward to doing the program for you every week. We appreciate you listening, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.